We're going to go straight to the next kina, Yud Zayin, on page 232 in the Yard Scroll. And this kina really speaks for itself. I just want to go through the words. If you have it in English, just read the English for this kina. In Tochalna Nash Imperium, mother waits, dreams of being a mother, becoming pregnant, of raising a child, and raise the child. And here a mother is so starved, crazed by starvation, that she's willing to eat those very children. Those babies, that you see, wow, baby, well, you see a child, wow, you grew a little, you're always measuring them. And now mothers would cook their own children. To goes in a past Rosham, the hair locks, how many times did this happen through our history? The Jews' hairs would be tied to horses that were running around the city square. Didn't happen so long ago. Im tidbak l'shon yonech l'cheik in dalid, this is aleph beis, in dalid. A baby's tongue be stuck to its palate, but see my own tzrichim and die of thirst. Wasn't so long ago that Klal Yisrael was subject to this kind of thirst. If you read accounts of the death march that I think took place on Tisha B'Av, at the end of the war when the Germans realized that the Russians were gaining on them and they just went on a march with 6,000, I think 2,000 made it till the end, how for 3 days marching in the middle of Av. And Germany could be hot this time of year. I'm sorry, Poland. I don't remember if it was Poland or Germany. I don't remember where it was. 3 days not allowing anybody to take a drink. Even if they would pass water, they'd shoot them if they'd stop for a second to take a drink from a stream on the spot. Mrs. Weinreb lived on our block. She was an elderly widow, the sole survivor of a large family. She lived in abject, harsh loneliness. My parents welcomed her into our home and made her feel she was part of our family, and she would always try to find vegetables to peel or dishes to wash or resort to other creative tactics to reassure herself that she was really needed and useful. Her walls were plastered with pictures of an era gone by, portraits of her mother, of her father, of her grandparents, of her uncles, of her aunts, of her sisters, of her brothers, all stared down at us, a silent testimony to a world that once was. But the photos that I found most difficult to look at were those of her beautiful twin girls, charmingly dressed in sailor outfits, huge white bows pinned to their hair. Children were snatched out of her arms and tossed into the fires of Auschwitz. It's hard to imagine that Mrs. Weinreb was once a mother of those smiling faces. When Mrs. Weinreb would unburden her painful memories to my mother, I'd look on with wide eyes and a lump in my throat. Once she turned to me, her palms spread over her forehead, her eyes filled with anguish. "You'll never know what went on there," she said. "No one will ever know. I myself find it hard. I ask myself, how did I go through the war and remain alive with my wits intact?" "No," she said, shaking her head. "You'll never understand it." We were set to work packaging bananas that were to be shipped to the front, Mrs. Weinreb related to me. "You have no idea how the sight of those bananas tormented us. Could you imagine the tantalizing smell they emitted? But the Nazi guard stood over us, menacingly fingering his whip with one hand, his rifle with the other. Our hunger tore at our stomachs. The temptation was humanly impossible to withstand. Pasuk Ginecha, Kumironi valayla, Shivchi kamayim libeich nochach pnei Hashem, Siyalav kapayach al nefesh al alayach ha tufim bera'av. Imagine the hunger. Ms. Weinreb continued, one young girl stood standing at my side, succumbed. For a moment, it appeared as if the Nazi turned aside, and she hurriedly slipped the banana into her mouth, banana peel and all. We all froze. Our fingers continued to work on autopilot. It tastes good, doesn't it? The guard sneered. Here, I'll give you another one. Open your mouth. He aimed his rifle. The bullets shot straight down. Nisyonos, pain, emotions that even if we tried to imagine in our scariest nightmares, we probably wouldn't be capable of. The incredible thing about this kina is that Rabbi Elazar HaKalir takes us through the Aleph Beis of all the suffering, all the starvation that happened. If you could please draw your eyes to Mem on top of 234. When we were in Poland last summer, the Polish tour guide wasn't Jewish. Polish tour guide said that there was no such thing. Every single village in Poland had Jews. It was 30% of the population was Jewish, of the Polish population. 30 million Poles total, and 10 of them were 10 million were Jews. He said that you had every single village had some Jews. Everyone was wiped out, of course. And you had entire villages, shtetlach, entire villages. An entire village. You could have an entire village of hundreds of people, thousands of people, hundreds of families, and there could be not one survivor. And there were dozens, maybe hundreds of villages like this throughout the countryside. It's almost hard to imagine that it's really possible. Look at letter Mem, Tuma'atna me'elef me'ah, you have 1,000, how it goes down to 100, umi me'ah asara, and from 100 goes down to 1. Alulai li ha'ayvei, how could this be? And so to Elazar HaKalir goes through the Aleph Beis, one after the other, talking about all the things that we experienced at various points of our existence. Alulai li, how could it be? Woe is to me. And in the brilliance of Elazar HaKalir, when you finally get to Tuf, you don't understand how anything could be so bad. You don't understand why could it be that we had to suffer so much all of a sudden after the alphabet finishes. V'ruach HaKodesh. After we complain to HaKodesh Baruch of all the things that He's done to us and all the things that we had to experience and our enemies showered upon us, V'ruach HaKodesh comes and says, points out, so fascinating. Mashikra Modim. All the things that happened to us, we complain to Hashem. But, responds the Ruach HaKodesh, Es Asher Asu, Lo Modim. But that which Klal Yisrael are responsible for, that we don't mention. If Tochanu Nashim Piryu Mashmiim, we cry out, how could it be that a mother will eat her own child? V'miyehari b'mikdash Hashem, Koin v'navi. But that veir that we committed in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, that we killed Kohen v'navi, lo mashmi, and that we don't seem to remember when we're complaining. Teaching us a very fundamental concept that is very distant to the West, modern Western mind. It's not called guilt. It's called bearing responsibility. It's called tzedek hadin. It's realizing on whom are the questions and on who are the questions not. It's so easy for us to blame, and we're so quick to blame. If not the teacher's fault, not the principal's fault, maybe it's the rabbi's fault, the leader's fault, the neighbor's fault, the goyim's fault, the Arab's fault, the president's fault. It's everybody's fault. There's one thing who we forget, one person we forget to blame. That's the point of this kina, but we only realize in the very last four lines of this kina. Sometimes things are our fault too. Kina Yud Zayin, page 232 in the art scroll. We're going to turn to Kina Chaf Aleph 21 on page 248. The Kina that we're familiar with, both from Tisha B'Av as well as from Yom HaKippurim, Arzei HaLevanon, that speaks of the Asar Harugei Malchus. Of course, they didn't all happen at the same moment in history, but there was a time period of Roman persecution, the end of Bayis Sheni, towards the end of Bayis Sheni, immediately after Churban Bayis Sheni, when, of course, they figured to do the best thing that they could do to stop Klal Yisrael. I think I mentioned last year, when I had just come back from Poland, that the first stop that the Nazis made in Poland was at the university, where they basically imprisoned all of the university professors, and that was their first stop. They realized that if you want to prevent discussion, you want to prevent revolution, you take the top. And therefore the Romans realized that if they want to destroy Klal Yisrael, they should take the top, they should take the leaders, the teachers, our Atanaim, Rabbi Akiva, Shmuel Kohen Gadol, Yehuda ben Bava, Hanan ben Tradion. And we talk about the murder, somewhat graphically, of our greatest Tanaim. And it's something that the Torah also does in Achremos. We talk about Achremos, Shnei Bnei Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, Misas Tzadikim Ar Mechaper. The Torah Tumima on Achremos asks, why is it that Misas Tzadikim Ar Mechaper? Is it that their death happens to atone for the rest of us, the rest of the generation? Says the Torah Tumima, no. Says the Torah Tumima that when we give kavod and our misabel on the Misa of Tzadikim, that is our way of being mechaber HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is mechaperas. To the extent that we're able to feel the pain of those who represent everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stands for, to that extent we are giving kavod to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is mechaperas. Now, I can't try to wrap my heads or try to explain why these things happened. Tzadik viralo. That's beyond us. As Chazal point out, that when this Gzeira came down, they asked Elisha Kohen Gadol to, Yishmael Kohen Gadol, thank you, to go up and ask in Shemayim. And from Shemayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, stop asking questions. So we can't ask questions why Hashem does things. But we could ask ourselves, how do we react or feel the loss when we read of things or find out of great people who were taken from us? I want to draw your eyes to one word. It's my own chiddush. I might be wrong. I'm probably wrong, but I think it's a meaningful diuk. On page 250, on Ayin and Pei, talks about Rishon Ben Elisha, the Kohen Gadol, as he's being killed. Anava Amar Pa Misgabra Batora. How could it be that this mouth that was Misgabra Batora, Pisom, all of a sudden, Nikmisa Allah Misa Mishuna Vachamur, all of a sudden was decreed on it a terrible, horrendous death? The word Pisom, I don't understand. Look, we could be Medayik, it's a Rishon who wrote this. Well, what does the word Pisom mean? Yeah, I know that you need to pay, great. But what does it mean suddenly? It was decreed. I assume this was a thought-out process of persecution that the Romans decided to aim towards the leadership, and they knew that Yishmael Kohen Gadol is, of course, he's a Kohen Gadol. Of course they're going to target him. It's not pissed-off. It's not a sudden thing that happened. Oh my gosh, they just decided randomly. They woke up one day, and he happened to be the first guy that they were able to reach one day, and they took a knife and cut off his head. No. This is a planned, targeted kill. What's the word pisom? I'm making this up. I could be wrong. But let's look at these words again. Anava Amar. How could it be a peha misgarbe batora? Pisom. Suddenly, I'm assuming it means immediately while the This mouth is learning Torah. They were killed while they're learning Torah. How could that be? How could it be that in 1929 you could have yeshiva boys sitting over their shtenders while they're learning Torah to bleed to death over their shtender? And we don't have to go back to 1929 to Chevron, but why could it be, or how could it be, that America has harav just a few years ago? Late night mishmar, five boys are shot to death and bleed to death over a Gemara Kiddushin, over a Gemara Bava Metzia. That's pisom. While they're learning, how could it be? But let me explain my question. Gemara in Sota, Daf Chaf Aleph. Amar Rav Yosef, there's a difference between doing mitzvahs and learning Torah. When you do a mitzvah, when you do a mitzvah, the mitzvah protects you while you're doing the mitzvah. But if you don't do the mitzvah, it won't protect you. Meaning only while you're doing a mitzvah it protects you. When you're not doing a mitzvah, it doesn't protect you. But Torah is different. The koach of Torah to protect the Jew, while you're learning it, of course protects you. But even when you're not learning, Torah protects you. Then how could it be? How could we piss them? How could it be that they bleed to death on their Gemaras? How could that be? I don't know the answer. In 1982, at the 8th Sim HaShas, Rav Shimon Schwab quoted a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the very beginning of Avodah Zarah. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah talks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's schedule for the day. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's day is divided into four sections. Shalosh HaRishonas HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yoshev Ba'osek BaTorah, the first quarter of the day, the first 3 hours, HaKadosh Baruch Hu learns Torah. The second quarter of the day, Yoshev Vidan Eskol HaOlam Kulo. He judges the world, and when he ultimately realizes that they don't deserve anything, Kevin Shirosh and Eschayev Olam Kliya, when in his judgment he realizes that the world deserves to be destroyed, you know what he promptly does every day? He promptly, Omein Mikisei Hadin, V'yoshev Kisei Rachamim. The third set of hours of the day, Yoshev Vizan Eskol HaOlam. He sustains, he provides parnas, he provides food for the entire world, from the smallest bugs to the greatest elephants and us in between. The last part of the day, Brevius, my Ovid, listen to this. Yoshev Umelamed Tinokos Shobes Rabban Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sits down, Kivayachol, and he teaches Torah to the little children. I'm a little confused. The first part of his day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sits down and learns Torah. What is it that at the end of the day, he sits down and learns Torah with the Tinokos Shobes Rabban? Rishon Schwab says, you have to look at Rashi. Rashi says three words. You know who those Tinokos Shobes Rabban are? Shemesu Kishahin Katanim. Those little boys who died while they were still little boys and didn't have the chance for their father to learn with them, to teach them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes them for the 3 hours, the last 3 hours of his day, Kivayachol, and sits down, Yoshev, Velomed Melamed Tinokos Shobes Rabban Torah. After Schwab quoted that Gemara, he commented that he once read a conversation that was recorded from somebody who escaped, that was overheard from somebody who escaped a gas chamber. It happened rarely. There's somebody in our shul who has a family member who also escaped a gas chamber. Somebody in our shul. And the person responded after he escaped the gas chamber. He overheard the following conversation. A little boy asking his mother the following words in Yiddish. Mama, you could say, explain the Yiddish better than myself. Mama, ich bin doch allemal gewesen a gute Jingle. Wasn't I always a good boy? After which he inhaled to catch his breath and inhaled the Zyklon B gas and gave his neshama back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At which point I assume HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to respond to that question at their chavrusa later that day and tell that little boy, yes, you were a very good boy. And since you were a very good boy, I have a very good chavrusa for you. I'm going to learn with you. I'm going to sit with you. I'm going to be your Rebbe. I'm going to learn with you and your brother and your sister. You'll be in my shir. I'll take care of you. We read in the Kina, Tzadi, Tziva lahavshid, Rabbi Shmuel ben Kohen Gadol, was very beautiful. And he was so beautiful that the executioner's daughter, or the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar, or Titus, whoever, I'm sorry, Titus, or Vespasian, I'm not sure who it was, wanted his body. And at least to take his skin off his body so she could look at the beautiful facial features that he had. Tziva, so that the executioner was willing, Tziva lahavshid es rosho, to flay the skin off his face, bisar, with a razor blade. I remember hearing from Volbez itself. Rishmael Kohen Gadol was incredibly beautiful. Incredibly beautiful. You know why? Volbez said that because Rishmael Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And that experience of being in the Kodesh HaKadoshim as a Kohen Gadol once a year impacts a person's ruchnius. It elevates a person to a way that we can't begin to understand, but you know what it also does? There's an outward, external manifestation to that pneumius dikka elevation, and it radiates beauty in the person's face. That's why Shmuel Kohen Gadol was so beautiful. And that's why this Roman behema wanted his face. And that's why, I believe it's in the next kina, we talk about the children, the daughter and the son of Shmuel Kohen Gadol, who was so incredibly beautiful, inherited that beauty that emanated from his experience at Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's why they were taken captives and mated in the Kina that we'll say, I think, a little bit later. I'll draw your eyes to another phrase. When we talk about Rabbi Akiva, page 250 in the middle, Me'acharav hevius Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva. Oker harim. Tochron zubis zubis svar. Imagine sitting in a shir, listening to what Rabbi Akiva is doing in a shir, and they take their comb of, their metal comb, b'masrek, and they rake his body. I had a friend, Olav Hashom, Akiva Aaron Price, at Tzaddik, a year younger, a year and a half younger than me. And he suffered terrible, all kinds of tumors in his brain. And when his brother was maspid him, his brother was my age, was maspid his younger brother, this is the line that he quoted, all the surgeries that he had to go through. Akiva, they took that Masrik Shel Barzel. And the Kina continues, Yotzitza Nishmaso Be'echad. Rabbi Akiva, of course, as Chazal teaches us, he was overjoyed that he has the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, of Ahavtas Hashem Elkecha, Bechol Nafshecha. And as he said, Echad, he gave his neshama to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ashrei, Ashrech Rabbi Akiva Gufa Tar B'chol Minei Tara. How do we understand such a thing? How do we understand such a thing? Sanza Rebbe, I saw this in Rabbi Spiro's book. Sanza Rebbe said that maybe that's pshat when we cover our eyes when we say Kriya Shema. Say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu. Hashem Elokeinu. Hashem is Midas Harachamim. Elokeinu is Midas Hadin. And you look around the world and you don't understand how these two things could come from the same. You see wonderful, happy, joyous things, and then you see so much terrible things that we can't understand, so much pain, so much in our own community, in our own families, and you don't understand how could it come from the same Echad. How could it be Hashem Echad? And that's why we have to cover our eyes. Because when we're looking with our eyes, we can't understand. Sometimes we have to cover our eyes to be able to realize that it's not as it seems, that somehow there's a rhyme to the reason, there's reason for the rhyme, there's a method to the madness. Just like Yaakov, who didn't know where Yosef had been for 22 years, right when he meets up with Yosef, he says Kriya Shema, not because it was Man Kriya Shema, because that was when he was a moment of clarity, when he was able to realize that everything that had transpired, all the Avelis that he had cried over his lost son for 22 years, Where is he? How could it be that he was taken? How come I'm not forgetting? There must be something terrible happened to Yosef. All of a sudden, 22 years later, it comes together and he realizes it had to be that Yosef go down to Mitzrayim and be available to take us all and give us life and feed us. That moment of reality, that moment of recognition of the reality when the Elokeinu and the Echad, the Elokeinu and the Yudke Vavke become unified to understand that it is Echad. That's why he said Echad. That's why he said Shema at that moment. That's what we have to realize. When we say Shema, we read about our Rabbi Kiva saying Shema, that Elokeinu and that Yudke Vavke is one. Kalava Rebbe was just Nifter not so long ago. And one of the things that he was very into, he liked going to secular kibbutzim, secular schools all over Eretz Yisrael. He traveled the world in a crazy way. He was driven in a crazy way to reach audiences of Jewish children, secular, irreligious, anti-religious especially. And he would talk to them. I remember he came once to Karen Biavna when I was in Karen Biavna. He came once. And he spoke, and it was incredible to watch him. He called on a boy, he said, "What's your name?" Just randomly, he said, "What's your name?" He said, "Yosef," whatever. He said, "Yosef." And then he started saying Gamachi about Yosef and the name, beautiful Yosef. Just his ability to just talk to random people he never saw before was uncanny. And his goal was always at the end of whatever he would speak with, whatever audience, whatever secular merits kibbutz he would go to, he would get to say, "Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad." That was the call of a Rebbe. I saw a story also in this Rabbi Spiro's book. A story that happened to be at the Kalava Rebbe. Let me share with you this very short story. And maybe it's this story that etched itself in the Kalava Rebbe's mind and heart that motivated him, that pushed him to do what he did for the past years as he traveled around Eretz Yisrael and the world, getting Jewish children to say Shema Yisrael. As the Kalava Rebbe looked out of his window in the ghetto, he wondered what would become of the Eibishter's people. He knew that hundreds of people were dying every day of hunger and disease, or being rounded up and transported to camps where they would ultimately be killed. But one strange sight caught his eye. Day after day, he noticed a little boy running along the train tracks just outside or inside the ghetto, and screaming. The child seemed to be repeating certain words over and over. And after doing this for a short while, the boy would return. And he would do this again and again, day after day. One day, the Kalava Rebbe approached the child and asked him what he was doing. A few days ago, the boy explained, "My mother was taken from me. She was grabbed by some soldiers and thrown onto a train. I tried to get close to her to be with her, but they didn't allow me. They threw me to the floor. As I tried to pick myself up, the train started to slowly pull away. As I stood there crying, my mother called out to me and said, 'Never forget, my Yingele. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad.'" The boy looked up, and with tears filling his mournful eyes, he said, "Rebbe, I'm so worried that I am going to forget. So every day, I go outside to those tracks where I ran after my mama, and I shout Shema Yisrael over and over again as I run along those tracks. This way I'll make sure I'll never forget." Kina Chaf Aleph, page 248. Azei Levanon Adirei Torah.
They say it's been many years from our royal sebzura. Kazay atrufa b'shoy katruma. Aryei afakfira. Yeitim adenai v'lo yosef oit v'yasra. Amid firkayim kashalayim. Chelak yakayim mashiya v'eizzara. V'tzedek yimlech melech yimar sholmu yimei evleich. Loi roi yisa v'nei leich.
We're going to get fast forward 1,000 years from the Asar HaRogei Malchus, which was happened at the end of Bayis Sheni, around the year 70 earlier and later of the Common Era. We're going to fast forward 1,000 years to the Crusades, to the next Kina Chaf Beis. And now we're no longer with Rebbe Elazar HaKalir, We have some of the Rishonim who talk about the communities that were destroyed in the Crusades by the Christians, our good friends, the Christians, and want only the best for us, of course. I want to share with you a shaila. The Munkach Rebbe was asked the following shaila. In many cities, especially in Europe, there are clocks in the city's town square. Old cities, old European cities, there's a clock in the middle, and the clock is on the church. The church has a spire, and on top of the church, there's a clock in the middle of the town. So wherever you are in the market or the town, in the town square, you could look and see what time it is. So the shaila that was asked to the Munkach Rebbe is, are you allowed to look at the clock to see what time it is? So the question really devolves around the question of what's the status of Christianity. Is Christianity Avodah Zarah? You're of course not permitted to get benefit from, to be netted from Avodah Zarah. Is the Trinity defined as Avodah Zarah? The Trinity not defined as Avodah Zarah? And I give shir on this every year in the descent of December on our Thursday night Mishmar. We talk about in the Halacha, different shitas. And the Munkach Rebbe says that, yeah, you're allowed to look at that clock on top of the church. You know why? Because it's on top of the church, nothing to do with any religion. It just happens to be that the tallest buildings in each of these European cities, not just European, in each of these cities, the tallest building is the church. And therefore, they put it at the tallest point in the city, so you're allowed to look at the clock because it's there for practical purposes, not for religious purposes. That's the psak of the Milchas Eluzer, the Munkach Rebbe. But then he adds, then he had something incredible. He says, and don't you dare think that it's mutter because Christianity is not Avodah Zarah. Don't you dare think that it's mutter because Christianity is, oh, it's only a Trinity, it's not pagan, it's not idolatrous. Pashut, the emunas hanotzum din Avodah Zarah yesh lahem. Chas v'shalom to say that Christianity is not a Avodah Zarah. You know why? Because if we take a position that might be, if you learn the lumdus of the sugya, maybe it sounds, according to some opinions, maybe Christianity with a Trinity, it's not exactly paganism or idolatry, or it's not really a Avodah Zarah, says the Munkach Rebbe. Because if you say that, you know what you're doing? You say that all the people that we're about to read about who gave their lives not to become Christian as they were presented in the Crusades, after all the different times in history, you say that they all gave their lives in vain. And you can't do that. And for the fact that they gave their lives not to be baptized, it's clear as day that it is pure Avodah Zarah for which you are obligated to give your life and no less, if need be. If you turn in this Kina, page 256, 10th line. Kina Chaf Beis, if you have the Arsku, it's on page 256, the second page. We have the Christian hordes approaching a city. The typical situation, if they were able to, sometimes they were gathered together in shul, sometimes in a fort, as many of those cities had. The bottom of page 254, Vinizvadu Befrishus of Atara, they all gathered together. The Kadesh Shem Hagolda Vanora, they knew what was coming and they knew what the Christian crusaders had in mind. There wasn't going to be any softy, lovey, prince of peace here. They knew what was awaiting them, the Jews. And they gathered together to prepare themselves, the Kadesh Shem Hagolda Vanora. And they gathered together to give chizuk to one another as they prepare themselves to give up their lives, to be killed for being Jews, and to ensure Lidavik B'yira Tahor at the top of 256, to make sure with their pure Yira, B'liko, not to bend down La'avodah Zarah, to let the Christians have what they wanted, and skip a few lines. They realized that they're not going to have pity, that if they have to, they'll kill their children and they'll snap their children's necks, and they'll slice their children's throats. Lahalom rosh v'likrot shedra, to snap the neck. Lo zachinu ligadelchem latorah. If we are not zocha to raise you, our dear beloved children, to Torah, instead, we will make a choice. Na krivchem keola v'haktara, will sacrifice you like a korban ola. V'nizke imachem la'ora, we will be zocha together with you, as we are going to be killed by those crusaders. With you, our children, we will kill. Because what would the crusaders do? They would take the kids, baptize the kids, and then you have a few more proselytes that could join the Christian numbers. No, we won't let them do that. We'll take your lives. We'll be zocha to the great light that awaits those who dedicate their lives to Hashem. Had a diuk. Could be wrong. I just saw this diuk yesterday. Of all the karbanos, v'nakrivchem ka'ola v'haktara. Yeah, it rhymes. Rhymes ora, karban ola, Torah. But I think there's more. The Python chose the word karban ola because karban ola is the one karban that you take nothing for yourself, but it's entirely burnt and consumed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This was done with absolute yira tahora, as the Kina mentions. There was no vestige of anything personal, of any self-gain or self-profit. It was pure l'shem shamayim, taking their children, sacrificing as a korban ola. Who are these communities? These communities were the great Bali Atosos. If you turn to the path top of page 258. Torah, Torah, Chigri Sak. Forget about the Avelis for the people. The Avelis for the Torah itself. Evel Yachid, a unique Evel Asilach, we're going to make for you. And the next phrase, just I don't know, just grabs me. The literary beauty of the next phrase. Al Tovsim Shatayach. Those people who row the oars of your Torah. Uforsim Achmorim. Who spread out the nets of Torah, Malachayach, the sailors, V'chovlayach, and the captains, B'mayim Adirim, in the Yam HaTorah, who guide us, Mefanecheitza Funayach, those who know how to uncover the secrets of your Torah, Megalim Estorim, who reveal the secrets. Who's going to do that for us? Miyafarik HaVayis, who's going to answer all of the questions? Miyatayis Shvarim, who's going to respond to all the shilas that we have? Miyafli Naziris, who's going to take away the nizarim that you need a Talmud Chacham for? Who, where, what are we going to be left with? We're a nation of Yesomim. Where are the people who are available to answer our questions? This is just one small drop, one small city, one small village, somewhere in Germany, in France, in Austria, that was wiped out. And what's left of it was this kina. Kina Chaf Beis, page 254. Acharishu mimeni. Sichi vahiva v'kol v'hi yarima. We're going to jump now to kina Lamed Aleph on 304 in the art scroll. Eshtukah Bekirbi, which we'll sing together in a moment. And here, the Paitan again uses the power of contrast. How incredible things were, how beautiful things were, how glorious things were, how splendorous things were, how majestic things were, but Tzeisim Mitzrayim. And the contrast, how terrible things were, how horrible things were. Yeah, Lamed Aleph, 31. But Tzeisim Yerushalayim. And we go back and forth, undulating between joy and lament, talking about, for example, the Shechina on one hand dwelled among us when we left Mitzrayim, on the other hand left us when we left Yerushalayim. Talk about Karbanos of Behemos Tahoros when we left Mitzrayim, but a different sort of Karbanos in letter Zion. Instead of the Zevach U'Mincha, instead we have the children, Klal Yisrael, being slaughtered, Litzon Kitzon Tivcha. We talk about leaders, Kohanim V'Leviim, instead of when we left Yerushalayim to Rome. The leaders were the slave sellers, the taskmasters. Stones! In the letter Chaf, you have beautiful stones on the Choshen of the Kohen Gadol. But there's another kind of stones, Avni HaKala, the catapult stones that were aimed at our cities. The bottom, on page 306, the tzitz hazav, different kind of crowns. The Kohen Gadol has a tzitz, a beautiful tzitz. And the tiara of our respect, of Klal Yisrael's kavod, thrown to the ground. That contrast. I want to draw your eyes to one point. Yovel Shmita, the letter Yud. When we left Mitzrayim, when we entered Eretz Yisrael, we had Yovel, we had Shmita, Esher, Keter, a nice quiet land. When we were brought out of Yerushalayim, but Tzeisim Yerushalayim, Machro Letzmisus, right? A Jew is never allowed to be sold. Letzmisus forever. Your slave is sold for 6 years, and if he decides he wants to stay and become a Nirtza, then he has the option to stay for another till the Shemitah comes. No, we didn't have a choice. The Romans took us, they sold us as slaves. Machro Letzmisus, but Tzeisim Yerushalayim. I don't need a show of hands, but I know that a good number of you have been to Rome, have been to the Colosseum. I want to share with you a conversation I had with the other teacher on the program that we had in Eretz Yisrael. They came to Eretz Yisrael to teach on our summer program, our family and one other family. And on the way to Eretz Yisrael, they stopped in Rome for 2-3 days. They went to the Colosseum, and they were awed. The size of the Colosseum to be built, a building 2,000 years ago, with seating for 50,000 people, with an average audience of 65,000 people because of all the standing room only shows that took place at this Colosseum. An engineering feat, an architectural marvel. It's incredible. And as they were admiring the beauty, the magnificence, the sheer size, to imagine that 2,000 years ago something like this could be built so strong and so well built and so well designed that it's still standing today, practically in its initial form, until they heard the tour guide open his mouth and explain how it was built. Just so you know, the Colosseum is among the most popular tourist attractions in the world, 7.4 million visitors a year, in case that interests you. So, the Colosseum was the largest amphitheater ever built at that time. But who built it? How was it built? When was it built? And where did they get the resources for such a mammoth architectural feat? The construction began, I cut and pasted this from somewhere. The construction began under the Emperor Vespasian. That name ring a bell? Aspasianus. He was the one who was the first one to try to destroy the second Beis Hamikdash. He began construction in the year 72 of the Common Era, and was completed a few years later under his successor and heir, someone by the name of Titus, or as Gemara Gittin calls him, Titus. So the construction was funded by the opulent spoils. This is what the tour guide is telling my fellow teacher on my summer program when she's visiting. She and her husband are visiting Rome. We're taken from the spoils of the Jewish temple after the Great Revolt in the year 70 of the Common Era. According to an inscription that was found on site in the Colosseum, quote, there's a quote from the inscription, "The Emperor Vespasian ordered this new amphitheater to be erected from his general's share of the booty of the loot from Judea." Along with the spoils, an estimated 100,000 Jewish prisoners were brought back to Rome after the war. I think Josephus writes 97,000. And many, said the tour guide, contributed to the massive workforce needed for such a great construction. At which point, this fellow teacher, she was a teacher for the ladies, I taught the men on the summer program, she said, "I got sick to my stomach and I stamped out of the tour. I said, I have to pay an entrance fee to walk in to the Colosseum that the money from my Beis HaMikdash financed, and that my grandparents were taken as slaves to build, and they charged me an entrance fee to see that? I was nauseous for the rest of the time in Rome. I once wanted to leave Rome, she told us. Forgetting about who were in the shows. The gladiators, you know who they used? When they wanted to put on shows to entertain the great civilization of Rome? Slaves. Which slaves do you think they used to feed the gladiators and the hungered beasts? You don't have to go to the Kotel. You can go to Rome. You could also see the Chuban in Rome. That's Betzesi Mirushalayim. Let's turn to Kina, Lamed Aleph. We'll sing it together. Eish tukad bekirbi behalasi ali bibetzesi mi mitzrayim. Kine ma'ira leman azkira betzesi mirushalayim. Azya.